He didn't stop to think. Plunging a hand down the neck of his robes, he whipped out his wand and roared, "Expecto Patronum!" Something silver-white, something enormous, erupted from the end of his wand. He knew it had shot directly at the Dementors, but didn't pause to watch. His mind still miraculously clear, he looked ahead. He was nearly there. He stretched out the hand, still grasping his wand, and just managed to close his fingers over the small, struggling snitch. Madame Hooch's whistle sounded. Harry turned around in mid-air and saw six scarlet blurs bearing down on him. Next moment, the whole team were hugging him so hard he was nearly pulled off his broom. Down below, he could hear the roars of the Gryffindors in the crowd. "That's my boy!" Wood kept yelling. Alicia, Angelina and Katie had all kissed Harry, and Fred had him in a grip so tight Harry felt as though his head would come off. In complete disarray, the team managed to make its way back to the ground. Harry got off his broom and looked up to see a gaggle of Gryffindor supporters sprinting onto the pitch, Ron in the lead. Before he knew it, he had been engulfed by the cheering crowd. "Yes!" Ron yelled, yanking Harry's arm into the air. "Yes! Yes!" "Well done, Harry," said Percy, looking delighted. 10 galleons to me. Must find Penelope. Excuse me." "Good on ye, Harry!" roared Seamus Finnegan. "Ruddy brilliant!" boomed Hagrid over the heads of the milling Gryffindors. "That was quite some Patronus," said a voice in Harry's ear. Harry turned around to see Professor Lupin, who looked both shaken and pleased. "The Dementors didn't affect me at all," Harry said excitedly. "I didn't feel a thing."
"That would be because they weren't Dementors," said Professor Lupin. "Come and see."
He led Harry out of the crowd until they were able to see the edge of the pitch.
"You gave Mr. Malfoy quite a fright," said Lupin.
Harry stared. Lying in a crumpled heap on the ground were Malfoy, Crabbe, Goyle, and Marcus Flint, the Slytherin team captain, all struggling to remove themselves from long, black, hooded robes. It looked as though Malfoy had been standing on Goyle's shoulders, standing over them, with an expression of the utmost fury on her face, was Professor McGonagall.
"An unworthy trick," she was shouting, "a low and cowardly attempt to sabotage the Gryffindor Seeker. Detention for all of you, and 50 points from Slytherin. I shall be speaking to Professor Dumbledore about this, make no mistake. Ah, here he comes now."
Anything could have set the seal on Gryffindor's victory, it was this. Ron, who had fought his way through to Harry's side, doubled up with laughter as they watched Malfoy fighting to extricate himself from the robe, Goyle's head still stuck inside it.
"Come on, Harry," said George, fighting his way over. "Party! Gryffindor Common Room, now!"
"Right," said Harry, and feeling happier than he had done in ages, he and the rest of the team led the way, still in their scarlet robes, out of the stadium and back up to the castle. It felt as though they had already won the Quidditch Cup. The party went on all day and well into the night. Fred and George Weasley disappeared for a couple of hours and returned with armfuls of bottles of butter beer, pumpkin fizz, and several bags full of Honeyduke sweets.
"How did you do that?" squealed Angelina Johnson, as George started throwing peppermint toads into the crowd.
"With a little help from Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot and Prongs," Fred muttered in Harry's ear.
Only one person wasn't joining in the festivities. Hermione, incredibly, was sitting in a corner, attempting to read an enormous book entitled Home Life and Social Habits of British Muggles. Harry broke away from the table where Fred and George had started juggling butterbeer bottles, and went over to her.
"Did you even come to the match?" he asked her.
"Of course I did,"
said Hermione in a strangely high-pitched voice, not looking up.
"And I'm very glad we won, and I think you did really well, but I need to read this by Monday."
"Come on, Hermione, come and have some food," Harry said, looking over at Ron and wondering whether he was in a good enough mood to bury the hatchet.
"I can't, Harry. I've still got 422 pages to read,"
said Hermione, now sounding slightly hysterical.
"Anyway,"
she glanced over at Ron, too,
"he doesn't want me to join in."
There was no arguing with this, as Ron chose that moment to say loudly, "If Scabbers hadn't just been eaten, he could have had some of these fudge flies. He used to really like them." Hermione burst into tears. Before Harry could say or do anything, she had tucked the enormous book under her arm, and, still sobbing, ran towards the staircase to the girls' dormitories, and out of sight. "Can't you give her a break?" Harry asked Ron quietly. "No," said Ron flatly. "If she just acted like she was sorry. But she'll never admit she's wrong, Hermione. She's still acting like Scabbers has gone on holiday or something." The Gryffindor party only ended when Professor McGonagall turned up in her tartan dressing-gown and hairnet at 1 in the morning to insist that they all went to bed. Harry and Ron climbed the stairs to their dormitory, still discussing the match. At last, exhausted, Harry climbed into bed, twitched the hangings of his four-poster shut to block out a ray of moonlight, lay back, and felt himself almost instantly drifting off to sleep. He had a very strange dream. He was walking through a forest, his firebolt over his shoulder, following something silvery white. It was winding its way through the trees ahead, and he could only catch glimpses of it between the leaves. Anxious to catch up with it, he sped up, but as he moved faster, so did his quarry. Harry broke into a run, and ahead he heard hooves gathering speed. Now he was running flat out, and ahead he could hear galloping. Then he turned a corner into a clearing, and... "Ah! No!" Harry woke as suddenly as though he'd been hit in the face. Disorientated in the total darkness, he fumbled with his hangings. He could hear movements around him, and Seamus Finnegan's voice from the other side of the room. "What's going on?" Harry thought he heard the dormitory door slam. At last, finding the divide in his curtains, he ripped them back, and at the same moment Dean Thomas lit his lamp. Ron was sitting up in bed, the hangings torn from one side, a look of the utmost terror on his face. "Black! Sirius Black! With a knife!" "What?" "Here, just now. Slash the curtains. Woke me up." "You sure you weren't dreaming, Ron?" said Dean. "Look at the curtains, I tell you. He was here." They all scrambled out of bed. Harry reached the dormitory door first, and they sprinted back down the staircase. Doors opened behind them, and sleepy voices called after them. "Who shouted? What are you doing?" The common room was lit by the glow of the dying fire, still littered with debris from the party. It was deserted. "Are you sure you weren't dreaming, Ron?"
"I'm telling you, I saw him!"
"What's all the noise? Professor McGonagall told us to go to bed!"
A few of the girls had come down their staircase, pulling on dressing-gowns and yawning. Boys, too, were reappearing.
"Excellent! Are we carrying on?" said Fred Weasley, brightly. "Everyone back upstairs," said Percy, hurrying into the common room and pinning his head boy badge to his pyjamas as he spoke.
"Sirius Black," said Ron faintly, "in our dormitory, with a knife, woke me up."
The common room went very still.
"Nonsense," said Percy, looking startled.
"You had too much to eat, Ron. Had a nightmare."
"I'm telling you."
"Now really, enough's enough."
Professor McGonagall was back.
She slammed the portrait behind her as she entered the common room and stared furiously around.
"I am delighted that Gryffindor won the match, but this is getting ridiculous. Percy, I expected better of you."
"I certainly didn't authorize this, Professor," said Percy, puffing himself up indignantly. "I was just telling them all to get back to bed. My brother Ron here had a nightmare."
"It wasn't a nightmare!" Ron yelled. "Professor, I woke up, and Sirius Black was standing over me, holding a knife!"
Professor McGonagall stared at him.
"Don't be ridiculous, Weasley. How could he possibly have got through the portrait hole?"
"Ask him," said Ron, pointing a shaking finger at the back of Sir Cadogan's picture. "Ask him if he saw—" Glaring suspiciously at Ron, Professor McGonagall pushed the portrait back open and went outside. The whole common room listened with bated breath.
"Sir Cadogan, did you just let a man enter Gryffindor Tower?"
"Certainly, good lady!" cried Sir Cadogan.
There was a stunned silence, both inside and outside the common room.
"You
"'You did,' said Professor McGonagall. "'But the password?'
"'He had 'em,' said Sir Cadogan proudly. "'Had the whole week's, milady. "'Read 'em off a little piece of paper.'
Professor McGonagall pulled herself back through the ported hole to face the stunned crowd. She was white as chalk.
"'Which person,' she said, her voice shaking, "'which abysmally foolish person wrote down this week's passwords and left them lying around?'
There was utter silence, broken by the smallest of terrified squeaks. Neville Longbottom, trembling from head to fluffy-slippered toes, raised his hand slowly into the air.